Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with JL Covan. I'm JL Covan here, as always, with producer Mike. Hello, producer Mike.
Hi, JL. Hi, everybody. How are you feeling today, JL?
Well, I guess this is a good time to tell everybody this is the last episode of Rain on Your Parade.
No.
Well, let it sit for a minute. Like, I want the shock to register.
You think that'll kickstart some of the fans into being like, oh, no, please don't.
No, I don't, actually. That's the thing. If I said I have stage four anything right now, they'd be like, oh, well, it's been good. Hey, if you could just buy my album and the money will go towards my cancer medication. No, I'm not really into that. But good luck. Good luck. Light and love to your doctors.
They got to spend that money on Shane Gillis tickets.
Well, you got to. You got to. There's so many things. I had a great show this weekend. I was in Rutherford, New Jersey. 25 people showed up.
Yeah.
The entire state of New Jersey, including people who, for instance, I'll give you an example right now. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to be one of those episodes, people.
Can I just say, before we start, I'll handle the disclaimer. I'll open this episode up. We came in here and we were trying to figure out exactly what we wanted to talk about this week, get some variety going. We feel like the fans, you know, we like talking about baseball and Taylor Swift and maybe the viewing audience on,
or sports,
or
movies, or Broadway, or culture, or life, or manners, or technology,
yeah,
or a myriad of topics. But unless it's Trump bad, blah, 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 the algorithm shuts me down, and my fans have the curiosity of nothing.
Right.
When I don't do that.
So we've decided today, because instead of trying
fan appreciation
to
episode.
It's a fan appreciation. Fan so appreciation. You guys are getting it with both barrels. I have no control over this animal today. And that's going to be the episode. So before we even, you know, get into try to pretend that there's any other topics, this is what we're working with today. There is no talking you out of this.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Oh, by the way, I have shows coming up. I'm just kidding. You don't give a fuck.
We'll plug them though anyway.
Sure. I am in an off-Broadway musical called Dictator for a Day. I've already gotten helpful suggestions online for how the show should have been titled, a show that I'm starring in, not a show I gave the title to.
Yeah.
You know, oh, have you do you go up to Kristen Chenoweth and say, hey, have you thought of a different title than Wicked? No, you dummy, because I didn't fucking write the show. I'm in the show. Oh, and this is the best part. This is the best part. Somebody who I'm sure doesn't listen to this show, but if they do, this bud's for you, had asked me years ago to do if I could sing as Trump. And I was like, not really, but I could give it a try. Uh-huh. And then it was like, okay, I figured they were going to give me some songs to sing. No, it was really like an intensive job that I'd be doing. Like this person basically, you know, was hoping I could be a sharecropper or an indentured servant for their pithy idea.
Yeah.
So I get cast in this show and I say, it's October 4th, 5th, and 6th. It's on my website. It should be fun, I hope.
I'm going.
Yeah. And person texted me for the first time in several years. Hey, if you want to use that song I wrote a couple of years ago, by all means. And then sent me an audio file. And I was like, how fucking lame do people think I am? I'm in a show that in less than a week is happening. I didn't write it. I got the role in a show. So to use the Wicked example again, if I said I'm starting as such and such in Wicked on Thursday on Broadway, well, here's that song about Toto that I wrote 8 years ago. Would you like to slip it into the show? Hi, do you not know how anything works? So, that's October 4th, 5th, and 6th, Dictator for a Day. And it's spelled like dictator. I'm sorry. I didn't have time to tell people the hilarious idea of spelling dictator like penis, dick, like D-I-C-K.
Like Richard.
Tater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I missed the boat on that when I wasn't writing the show.
Was it discussed? You guys had me at production
meetings. I know. It should have been discussed. And I was too busy, in the words of Shooter McGavin, winning. So, no, I didn't see that. I didn't see that because I was too busy winning. I love Shooter McGavin, missed the list that nobody watched.
Barely. Barely.
I thought people who did listen to that episode loved it.
Of course.
Loved it.
Yeah.
We're getting way too niche on this episode. Movies. Oh boy. I didn't know he was going to get in the weeds with movies and NFL. So had a show. And then I have other shows. I have a Making Podcasts Great Again show on October 11th, which is going to be great. It's in New York City, my hometown. So naturally I don't expect to sell many tickets. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the 17th of this month, Chicago, the 18th and 19th. Emporia, Virginia on the 30th, which is very, very Southern Virginia. I had somebody from Richmond say if I was ever playing down that way, I said, I'm in Emporia, which is, that's as close as I'll get. And he says, I'll try to make it. You're not making it. There is a 100% correlation between I'll try to make your show and not making the show.
I can't believe I even thought to think that maybe we'd do an actual topic today. This is one of those heat check episodes.
I have all sorts of things to say about Trump and the filth that inhabit this country.
Yeah.
And how our... But I've said that so many times. I don't have faith in our country anymore. I think we are on the long decline to hell as a society and as a globe. I do. I hate to feel that way. That is genuine. And I try to be optimistic. I try to fight the good fight, whatever the fuck that means. I do. I think we're on a way to hell. And it's pathetic. And everybody.
I'm going down.
Yeah. So that's what I have to say about Trump. I mean, the man is calling Kamala Harris mentally disabled. He's saying Haitians are eating pets. How the fuck can you think this country has hope when he is a 50-50 shot for the White House? How can you? Like, we have devolved. We have devolved, and we're not coming back. We're not coming back to a place where we go, oh, you know what? We learned our lesson. What the fuck was 2016 to 2020? This isn't a history lesson. This is a lesson from last week in the time of this country. It's like we just forgot that some dude tried to rape our aunt last month. And we're like, yeah, he can babysit again. What did he do again? Well, you know how Aunt Sally is. She's sometimes a little, tipsy with the facts. But that's like, well, just ask Aunt Sally. No, she's dead. Remember, it was a rape murder that he did. Oh, case was thrown out in court. Anyway, analogy going too dark. But the point is, I don't really have anything new to say right now. I know everybody who listens to this show loves my political takes. There's nothing left to say. This country, as long as we are obsessed in our cell phones, as long as we don't read, as long as we continue to produce stupid fucking kids on transportation looking at screens because mommy and daddy need some quiet time to look at their screens. So here, fat fuck junior, look at the tablet. Rot your brain, you piece of shit, because you are going to make society's lives worse in 15 years. You're going to say, I don't know how to talk to anybody, but I have a gun and diabetes, and I'm going to shoot up a Dunkin' Donuts while I'm eating Dunkin' Donuts. That's the country we are now. It's a wonderful place to be. So I don't have new takes. We're done. How about that? How about that for raining on people's parade? We're fucking done. Okay? We're done. This isn't like, hey, we're done. Kamala Harris is in a dogfight with a fucking racist, dementia-riddled rapist, and millions of people in this country think he's our only chance because they're dumb and they're racist and they're the worst shit this country has ever produced. On a relative scale, this country has never produced a worse batch of people than MAGA. That's just a fact. These people are garbage. Sorry. And then they can go, ooh, the tolerant left. Fuck you. You are a cancer, MAGA. You are cancer. You are AIDS. You are garbage. You are radioactive dregs of society. When you have opioid crisis, and that's the fucking thing. When immigrants or black people or women have like fought for rights or wanted more representation or DEI or whatever scary thing they want after centuries of oppression, sorry, you don't get a handout. Work harder. White people got upset for a few months and they're like, do we even have a country? MAGA's like, my guy lost an election. Like, do we, is the world over? Are we even here? The fat racist guy who can't put a sentence together and sells crypto and watches and Bibles and sneakers. Do we, is it? You have a fucking infomercial Klan member. That's your guy. And you're like, do we even have a country left? Because he lost an election. He should have lost an election. He should be in jail. Frankly, McDonald's should have done its job decades ago and put that fucker 6 feet down. But no, he's with us. And he has tons of people in my Instagram messages calling me soy boy. So on top of being fucking dumb and terrible people, they're hacks. Like, they're soy boy. That's the best you have, MAGA. Look at this soy boy cook. Look at him using words and stating facts from major news sources. Jesus Christ. Okay, maybe I had another Trump take in me. No commercials this week. We're going straight. The flamethrower is open until the gas tank is empty. And
that's
then
what
I
was saying. I literally, the second I saw that you had this in you today, I was like, let me just get out of the way.
Yeah. So I think we are done as a country. This could be a last episode. It's not, but yeah. This could be the theme of the last episode because there's so many things. Whenever I read a climate change book, it'll be 11 chapters of the oceans will be boiling. We'll be dying of thirst, you know, like on dry fucking places where rivers used to be. But there is some technology, like the last chapter, every editor must say to every climate reporter, could you put in one chapter of hope? Even though you said we're all going to die and boil alive, is there hope? I mean, there is this technology that might save 50 of us. Yeah, make that the last chapter, yeah. But then say it'll save 5 billion of us. And then we'll sell more copies.
Yeah.
Great. So we, you know. That's it. The human experiment is over. We failed. We failed either Mother Nature, God, or both. We have been given keys to a wondrous kingdom known as Earth. And we are the generation of Americans because we have a unique place, Mike, in this world. We are, whether you like it or not, we are the leaders. And with great power apparently comes great douchebaggery.
Yeah.
Because we should be stewards of the earth. We should be guiding the earth towards peaceful resolutions to conflicts. If we can, we can't, we are human. We can't guarantee peace. But as the leaders, I think we are fighting ourselves at this point because we have, and I will say this, this is why I get so mad at people who criticize Democrats. Mm-hmm. Because criticize Democrats when Democrats have all the power and can actually do things, fine. But this idea of like, you have one party in this country dedicated to doing absolutely nothing.
Right.
And one party dedicated to doing things and trying to help. Now, you can have different techniques, different strategies, different approaches, different levels of what you think is right. But we still live in this divide of you don't want to do anything. We want to do something. And until this is like conquered, and then you can have constructive, like I've always said, hey, if Mitt Romney and Joe Biden were leaders of the Republican Party, speaking in the parlance of your communist friends. If they were, you know what? We'd be a pretty damn fucking great country because they would be representing a sort of centrist and more conservative, but a conservative, once again, with the eyes on progress and make and doing things.
Yeah, voting for Mitt Romney never feels like the country is going to go completely down the drain and society is going to crumble.
And I'm saying if he were the leader, like if he were leading a center right party with his values, yes, I wouldn't agree with it, but I could be assured that when they came to a compromise, it would be a compromise that would be moving us forward. Maybe not as forward as you want, but moving us forward. Now you have a party dedicated to nothing, catering, by the way, to the worst, if I don't know if I said this before, the worst group of Americans ever birthed is the MAGA 2024 squad. They're the worst. They are morally bankrupt. being generous, intellectually insufficient.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
They are, but there is something wrong with you if you think Trump, and I blame white fathers. Maybe this could be the topic. White fathers failing America. For too long, it's been about black fathers. And everybody says, oh, black the breakdown of the black. Well, what happens when you have the breakdown of the black family? Maybe just speaking devil's advocate, increase in crime, inner city turmoil. Well, when you have a breakdown of white fatherhood and not enough good white role models, you get fat Hitler. I feel like that's a bigger problem. In the aggregate, of course, crime sucks, but man hell-bent on destroying the world for his own ego, worse than crime is up in our inner cities. If I'm just using that as a sort of accepting the worst arguments of both sides, yeah. As far as, anyway. But boy, did my fans get off the hook for a few minutes, because I think I just blew my anger load on MAGA.
How do you feel?
Like I need a cigarette. a hate cigarette. Oh, man, I love a smoke after I just fucking destroyed MAGA. But I have shows coming up. I just listed those. But I had a great show in New Jersey this weekend, Mike. It was in Rutherford, New Jersey. Mm. And it's a common thing that happens to me, which is I get hyped up for a show. I hype it up. I look at all my fans and I see that I'm, you know, a favorite son of New Jersey now. And
yes, you know, if
I give you, I'll just give you an example. During the pandemic, big fan. And when I say it like that, you know, I mean it in the most, you're a big fan at your, when it's completely convenient.
Yeah.
Meaning on your phone when I pop up. And I called this person's father. They asked me, and I never did this because I was making so much money on Cameo, but I said, the guy was like, oh, I'm in a town nearby. Like, it really meant my parents are huge fans. And I was like, you know what? I got nothing. I'll call. I'll make a prank call as Trump. They got a kick out of it. Great. I don't think that's any member of that family has been to one show I've done in New Jersey. and that's sort of what I'm talking about. And I'm not naming anybody. I'm not trying to call anybody out. And there's no reason, but I know it's like there's multi-generations. So it's not like you're all bedridden or something. But it's just one of those things where I go, okay, so they're not, like, I do not have fans in the traditional sense. And that's bad when you want to be an entertainer in the traditional sense, yeah. Like do live gigs. I'm not interested, no matter how much money I can make, I'm not interested. I don't consider this the same, but I'm not interested in being a video maker for the sake of video making in my apartment.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather honestly get a job in an office. I know that sounds crazy, but it's like, I'd rather do that and have no expectations and not keep up hope that my career will get to the place I want it to get. But there were like 25 people, and we sold, a fan of mine who doesn't live in New Jersey bought 5 tickets to the show, and he like offered them us if we wanted to give them to free to people. Guess how many people emailed to get those 5 free tickets, Mike? I'll give you between 0 and 1. Guess how many.
Was it 1?
It was 0.
Oh, damn.
And I'm like, I'm just sort of like, wow. I mean, that's nobody wanted a free ticket to a show, which, honestly speaking, I wrote it up in a blog. It was the second best show of my entire fucking life. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
And there is something to.
Did you get a tape?
Oh, that's the other thing. My co-host on the show, Jay, his tape stopped recording at 27 minutes, which was sort of, you know. It's good because I wouldn't want to at least relive a good moment in my comedy career. But those are the breaks.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes bad things happen all the time to me. So
what did you say when you came in? It's been a long life.
Oh, boy. It's been a long. No, it's. Oh, man. I forget.
You're knocking over the hats.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've had not a rough life, but it's like, in other words, somebody would say, it's been a hell of a day or something, but I was like,
yeah.
Oh, man, I've had a real shitty life, or whatever it was. But people need to understand who listen to this show or watch this content that when you can't give away free tickets to show, and
on mic, please.
Sorry. When you can't give away free tickets to your show that you're always getting told people love, something's not connecting.
Yeah, you start wondering, do you really love it?
Do you even like it?
Yeah.
And my thing with, you know, there was a scene in The Insider starring Al Pacino where they're discussing tortious interference, meaning, you know, interfering with like the contract of another employee or whatever, like getting them, inducing them to like fucking screw over their own contract. Mm-hmm. And in other words, every time somebody, when he, I think it was because Jeffrey Wigand, Russell Crowe's character, had a non, an NDA. I think it was an NDA or not, whatever it was. But by getting him to share information about tobacco, it was like the more times he shared, the more he was violating the agreement. Mm-hmm. So Al Pacino is basically like, so the more truth he tells, the more guilty he is. That's how I feel about having a good show now. Like, the better the show I have, the sadder I am after that my own fans aren't there to experience it. If I have a shitty show, it's like, oh, good thing nobody was there. But I'm having these fucking, I mean, this was like this hour that I did in Rutherford. I'm gonna make a bold claim, but it's fact. Mm-hmm. Is the single best hour of Trump parody ever. I was that good. My voice was that on point. The improv was that good. The crowd reaction and the reaction of my fellow comedians as part of the show, not being able to compose themselves. It was a masterpiece. And it's like, you have to take my word for it. Like I don't want to be the bullfrog in the fucking Looney Tunes that only sings. I'm trying to sing for the public.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the opposite of the Looney Tunes bullfrog. I'm in public and the public goes away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. My fans are the bullfrog just going. So I don't know what to do. I need to find some kind of happiness in entertainment that isn't fan related, because unlike A Streetcar Named Desire, I've never depended on the kindness of strangers, and I can't start now.
Do you think that the stuff that you're making, because we've discussed a million times on this podcast, the idea of quantity over quality. You just got to kind of keep feeding the algorithm, keep posting to YouTube, keep posting here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the quality of what you're doing is at the level that you would like it to be?
Yes.
Okay. So that's a good start.
Because I don't. The problem is, like, for instance, people loved my book reviews on Righteous Prick, the dead name for this podcast. Mm-hmm. So I started doing video book reviews, and I love those. And the people who watch them love them too.
Yeah.
Just not many people watch them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to. My fight, unfortunately, is I don't want to dumb myself down. And I'll get comments from 9 people saying, don't dumb yourself down. That's easy for you to say. It's like all my friends who always tell me how cool it is I'm pursuing comedy. And how they love the fact that I'm doing this, because they get to be in their house with their kids,
right,
and their car and their wife, and live vicariously through my struggles from the safety of a good life.
Right.
So they like that it's happening. They like that somebody they know is going after it. And as I know, when I do have little bouts of success, they love celebrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. They love that. Because then they get to that the payoff. It's like, I'm friends with a success.
Yeah.
But it's I make things that I'm proud of. I make shit that I think is good, and I have a lot of free time and a lot of energy and a lot of creative juices. So I make a lot of stuff, but I don't want to put anything out there. I won't even write a blog sometimes, even though I try to do it weekly, which I've been slipping up, because like, if I can't write something good, either funny or meaningful, I'm not writing something.
Yeah.
So I only do that. But it's like, there isn't really that much I'm putting out in the grand scheme of a week. It's like 3 3-minute videos and 2 45-minute podcasts or whatever. It's not a ton.
But what if we made a movie?
Well, I'm going to be in a play that nobody's going to go to.
I'm going.
So no, I but you know. That this will be a good test.
Yeah.
When I see nobody show up for this, I go, I don't know if I'm ready to move up to Megalopolis, the JL version.
$200 million disaster.
Yeah, I spent $120,000 of my own dollars for 9 friends to go to the movie and 48 fans to write, "Can't make it, good luck."
Oh, but it's streaming.
It's on demand.
Yeah,
it's,
no,
it's,
yeah, I can't watch.
No. Oh, I don't. I'm a little low on cash. Oh, no, it's on Tubi, which is free. My internet's down. It's okay. I'm projecting it outside your fucking house. I'm a little sick right now. Can you, here, it's on your phone that you're talking to me. It's playing right now. If you just pull your phone away from your face, you can just watch the movie right now. I had shoulder surgery, so I can't really move my arm like that right now. But good luck. Love your stuff. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a minute. And we're back. Mike, I feel like you should ask me how the break was this time.
Yeah, how are you doing, JL?
I've come down to earth a little bit. The rage has subsided a little bit. It'll be back. It'll be back.
Momentarily?
Maybe not this episode. If this were an anger porn, you know, I'd be like, you got to bring in the stunt anger cock.
Because
I got nothing left in the chamber right now.
Yeah, sure.
And I think stunt anger cock just lost us our ads.
No, not this late. Not this late into the episode. That's a 30 seconds thing.
That's true. I don't know what to do. I don't know if you have any advice. Obviously, I think maybe my career is just mirroring what I think of the country, where it's unsalvageable. No matter how much I want to think good things or do good work, maybe they're both just destined for failure.
Yeah.
And people always say to me, people who don't know my finances don't know the bitterness and the bullshit in this business. They're always like, no, you're doing great. And I'm like, well, you know how you didn't buy tickets to see me? Multiply that by everybody and then tell me I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Like this, there's this like, it's the worst of both worlds. It's like everybody thinks I'm doing great, so nobody's supports what I do
That's what life is like right now, though, man. Like with social media and everything, people are posting things about like the good stuff, so everybody's just like, ah, they're doing great. And then your friend fucking hangs himself. You're like, well, yeah, all his Instagram posts look great. It looked like he was doing great.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's our country's going down the shitter, and it can't be saved. And it's just a crazy thought, because I think our country is going to do what I've been doing with my comedy career, which is like, but we can tread water and we can stay at this level for a little bit. And then we're going to sink a little lower and we're going to be like, and then like some lucky thing will happen. It'll be like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm up again. And, you know, maybe we won't be around to see the end of it, but I just think I don't know how you reverse this. I don't know how you reverse what path we're on in terms of self-centeredness, tech obsessed, low attention span, high bullshit information. Because Donald Trump, just, we've lost already. That's the thing. I know that sounds depressing, but like, yes, he's a viable candidate despite having no qualities that a leader should have. Having so many qualities you don't want a leader to have, having basically committed treason, he's a sexual assaulter, he's a racist, he's very apparent about that, and he might be president again. And even if he's not, is there any comfort in Kamala Harris beating him 76 million to 73 million in the vote? Like,
no.
Do you know what I mean?
Not
like,
really.
Like, wow. Oh, phew. 50.7% of us aren't fucking animals.
Yeah. Can I ask, what do you think? All right, let's say that scenario happens. He loses the popular vote by, you know, a hair in that situation. We're assuming he probably can't run again, right? Like, he legally he can, but by the time the next 4 years rolls around, he's probably finished. No?
I mean, I hope he's literally like not with us anymore.
Well, that's a different conversation. But so let me ask.
I mean, but I'm impressed in a weird way. I am impressed because he's an angry, unhealthy piece of shit.
But they live forever.
I know. He's a cockroach.
Yeah. Yeah. So my question to you is, what do you think happens?
They don't live forever. Like turtles live a long time. But
I meant the survival skills. Yes. So what do you think happens if he's not going to run again after whatever this happens, if he loses? Who is up next? Like, what happens to the Republican Party? Do they just become this weird party of young, lost white guys that just like pick it up? Do they revert back in some way to like the Mitt Romney sort of rich guy party? Or like what happens? What do you think?
Well, I feel like the militiamen, the trailer trash, the opioid army, like they don't want to go back.
Yeah.
So they're going to be able to still flex their might. Maybe Don Jr. emerges. Maybe Don Jr. is the guy who...
You think they just hand it off?
I mean, maybe. Maybe. Like, maybe they look at him because J.D. Vance doesn't have it.
Yeah.
J.D. Vance can say everything he wants, but he doesn't have the charisma. He's not as authentic a piece of shit as Trump. He's a piece of shit, but it pours nicely out of Trump.
Yeah.
So they could look at Don Jr. and go, you know, yeah, we wanted to see Frank Sinatra, but we'll get tickets Junior. To Frank Sinatra Jr. Yeah, we're disappointed, but we're here. Yeah. We're still going to go. It's the best we can do.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to be caught in this doom spiral or this doom loop, whatever the term is, where Democrats eke out an election. And then people on the left will give Kamala Harris 4 months before they start bitching about unfulfilled promises and the disaster and the hypocrite that she is.
Yeah.
The right will foment that and enjoy that and say racist things and call her a failure no matter what. I mean, they've managed to call this economy a failing economy despite all evidence saying it's anything but.
Yeah.
So we're in a place now where people can actually say to me on social media, like, the Biden economy has been a disaster. And I go, well, no, it hasn't at all. But can't convince you of that. There's no data available to make you unthink.
Look around, JL.
Yeah. So it's, I think we're just going to be caught in that loop where a Democrat is expected to save us and perform miracles. One half of the country remains obstinate and not even wanting to do anything because they view taking power as more important than doing something.
Yeah.
And then our side will break into their factions and bitch and moan and not stay united to move things forward because some will want less, some will want lots more. And then nobody's happy when you are forced into a compromise because it feels like you're compromising with yourself when what you're really doing is doing all the work because the people you should be compromising with or coming to the table with have no interest in governing or coming to the table or doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why when I made a post with just nothing but facts on Instagram, it was soy boy. It was, you're listening to CNN too much. It was like, this is all lies. Trump should sue you. And I'm like, so Trump doesn't have to pay E. Jean Carroll $80-something million. That's false.
Yeah.
He wasn't found guilty in Manhattan of criminal charges. Like, what do you mean? I'm saying lies. Like, yeah. What world are we, like, what world are you in? Like, so I think we're just going to see a repeat of kind of the Biden administration. And I don't mean that in any bad way, really. I don't know what Kamala Harris has planned and what she's going to do. But I think culturally and socially, our society is just going to remain deeper into this, like, you're not doing enough, Kamala. And the rest going, we're not doing anything, Kamala Harris. You're not even American. You black bitch. Like that. And I, you know, that's, I mean that. Like, that's going to be one half of the country. And I've always, and this is something, if anybody's listening still, some of the rhetorical things I like to throw at people in MAGA and stuff, where it's like, these are the people who'll be like, hey, bro, pressure builds diamonds, bro.
Yeah.
Like those kind of sayings. And I'm like, well, you know who's had a lot of pressure in this country? Black people. Women. Oh, but with them, pressure makes them lazy. It gives us the worst. The people who thrive out of tough circumstances when they're black are bad and not as talented and are only getting help because they're DEI. But when, I guess when a high school football player going to a Division II school says it, bro, he means it.
Yeah.
You know, when that racist teen from, you know, Oklahoma says it, it's real.
Yeah.
But when Barack Obama does it, even though he, you know, rises from circumstance, or when a poor black kid rises to the top, if it's athletics, fine. But if it's in corporate world or science or anything, well, no, he didn't. The pressure and him thriving under less than ideal circumstances. No, that's not what we meant. When they do it, it's DEI. When the whites do it, it's merit. But that's what I'm saying. You can even flip their phrases on themselves where it's like,
yeah,
he came from rags to riches. Oh, imagine coming from rags and racism to riches. You've overcome more. Maybe that's why in certain fields you see somebody excelling, because they've had more adversity. And we're supposed to like that, but oops, racism gets in the way. And that alters the equation from what it should be, which is like, isn't that great? Isn't that great that this person of whatever makeup? That's why whenever I see, I mean, and I just finished this book called All Who Have Gone Are Here, mm-hmm. or Everyone Who Has Gone Is Here by Jonathan Blitzer. Incredible book about immigration from Central America over the last 50 years. And I think I discussed this briefly last week. I mentioned it. But man, I finished that book and I'm in like a hotel in St. Paul and I'm looking at like these Central American looking maids, housekeepers. And I just left a 20 on like after two nights. I was just like, here's like, I just left it because I was like, I don't know where you came from. I can't say that I know where you came from, but it's like, this country is such a piece of shit now. That like when I'm on the subway late at night and I see some or the bus in New Jersey and I see like these little dudes that are clearly like on their second job working a restaurant.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
hustling.
You want to fucking tell me that these guys are the fucking enemy? You got a party in this country telling me that these dudes are the enemy. That they're not doing the American dream, that they're not contributing. And I get it, illegal, but they don't care about illegal or legal because they're calling everybody in Springfield, Ohio, illegal, even though like 95% of them are legal. Mm-hmm. But because it's not about, it's about, you know, at January 6th, I'm back, everybody. January 6th,
so much for that 15 minutes.
January 6th, they said the correlation most, whatever the word I'm looking for, but with people who attended January 6th, wasn't poverty. It wasn't this or that. It was, are your towns browner than they were like before?
Interesting.
In other words,
how'd they figure that out?
They arrested a bunch of these motherfuckers, I guess. And were like, oh, you're from this. Like somebody really analyzed the data and was like, the most common factor of January 6th attendees, not just, I think people ran in, but just where are you from? It was like, oh, if their town was turning less white,
yeah,
that doesn't mean poorer. That doesn't mean more crime. That means less white. And that's the thing. That's the thing people have never, and I've gotten into fights about this. White flight is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's not, it's white flight is a cycle, everybody. It goes racism, lower property values, poverty, crime. It isn't rich white people, crime.
Right.
We got to get out of here because crime just moved in. No, it's racism. Leave. Property value lower because we've created a system where if there aren't enough white people and we've downgraded the value of where black and brown people lived. So you get racism first. Let's go. There's a black couple. Oh, did you not think they can afford your neighborhood? Because they just bought a fucking house in your neighborhood. So where are you going? Oh, no, no. Now this has a bad rep. Racism gave this neighborhood a bad rep. Property values go. Now poor people can move in. but now it's a poorer neighborhood.
Yeah.
And these are people more likely to be influenced by wavering economic factors or closed factories or whatever the case may be. And now we have poverty and now we have crime. But people just do the math of like more black people.
Yeah.
And that's what Springfield is. It's like, hardworking immigrants filling jobs that are going undone. You know what that means?
Yeah.
Terrible. So once again, that is bigotry and they are feeding off of that. But like, that's a perfect example of, okay, so they're here legally. They're doing work. And it's not, I'm not saying it's perfect. There are issues when a lot of people move into your town in terms of services, schooling, health services, et cetera. So it's not perfect. But the fact is, town economy is doing better. Town jobs are filled by people who they're saying are grateful and hardworking to be here. And that's what they always want also, isn't it? Whenever a black person does something, they want them to be grateful.
Yeah.
These are grateful people. They're happy to be here. They're you know, Haiti is in dire straits. Trust me, these are grateful people and they're showing it by working hard and contributing to the community. But no, once again, it's not about gratitude, right? Because if you're a rich black guy like Colin Kaepernick, you need to be grateful. If you're a poor black person who's grateful, you need to be white. That's the thing, because a real American to everybody in these fucking, in the Republican Party, a real American is either a person of color who speaks more angrily against people of color and liberals than even they do. They're okay. Or a white guy with a mustache working in a factory. Like, that's working class. Those are, that's America to that party. So whenever I see these guys on buses or on trains and I'm just like, how can we treat these people? How are we treating these people like the enemy? Yes, you can show me some story about an MS-13 kid, and that's horrible, of course. But it's like, in the aggregate, the data just simply shows that migrants and immigrants do less crime than native-born people.
Yeah.
So it is race in all its forms, plain and simple. And you have a party that has taken a step back, and it has dragged America a step back. Like, we have gone, we were on the country evolution chart and we got to the last step and now we just took a step back. Like, we're the second guy on the evolution chart as a society now, yeah. Not the first. And I think we could backslide more because we have a lot of racism in this country. We have a lot of paranoia. We have less community. And I know I've made cell phones the enemy here, but I think cell phones are the fucking... They have been the midwife to this birth of a less hospitable, less generous, less thoughtful nation. I'm not saying the cell phone caused it, but the cell phone was the doula. Yeah. We were pregnant with a fucking racist, ignorant baby, and the cell phone was like, breathe with me. Breathe. Okay. MAGA, hold her hands. She's about to squirt out in an ignorant piece of shit into this bathtub. Breathe like we practiced. Ah, blacks. Wah, immigrants. Wah. And there we have it. The birth of a new nation starring Donald Trump. So the point is, that's how I also feel about my fans.
Right. To bring it full circle.
The parallels are there.
Yeah.
I don't understand you, but I know that my career is suffering because of you. I put my expectations that we were forming a more prosperous union, that being JL's comedy career, but we are not. So I hope you all are doing well. I hope some of you can make a show, but if you can't, that's okay. The bar has been set extremely low now, so my expectations are in the gutter for both my career and this country. So with that, let's do comedy news after this. And we're back, everybody, with Comedy Talk, which feels ironic given this episode. Mike, are you ready for just a brief segment of Comedy Talk?
Yes, very ready.
Mike's like, even I need to chuckle a little bit after this.
I was enjoying it.
After you laid waste to the world. But there's no punching out of the week because I think for the last hour I punched down about 8 billion people.
Yeah, the whole episode was a punched out of the week.
Yeah. But I will say this. I watched a special. Thankfully for this show, there's just never going to be a shortage of specials. The irony being, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to review 50 specials a year on a podcast.
Yeah, it's true.
You'd be like, oh God, guys, a new special came out. This is this season's special.
Yeah.
Well, I watched Ellen DeGeneres For Your Approval on Netflix. Now, I'm going to say this right now. I am a huge Ellen DeGeneres fan. If she has contempt for her staff like I have for my fans, so we could probably bond over that. But she addresses, this is, For Your Approval is basically, it's kind of half Ellen's stand-up and then half kind of talking about likability and how she got this rep for not being likable and how she doesn't really see it and she thinks it was overblown. But it's not like some whiny apology. Like, in other words, she doesn't do what Chappelle would do, which is, I've been criticized, so here's 45 minutes giving a speech about the people who are upset with no punchlines, Mike. She actually tries to make it funny, but get her point across. Now, she had a special, and I already forgot the title, but in 2018 on Netflix, and this was like her first one in 15 years because she was obviously doing the daytime TV thing and hugely successful.
Becoming
with that.
A billionaire.
Yeah. And I thought her 2018 special was absolutely great. And I was stunned because I just thought it would be like, oh, I liked that because I like her and she's funny. But I thought it was so sharp and so good, like she hadn't left the stage for years.
Yeah.
And I think her last one before that was like a 2003 one on HBO where she ended by doing like Shoop just during the credits. Hilarious. I remember her joke about, I don't know why this one sticks out to me so bad, but when somebody trips and they just decide to jog for two seconds. And she just acts that out and she's like, and I wanted to get here. It's just really funny the way she does it. But she is the epitome, in my opinion, of likable. Like on stage, I just don't know how she is just. It's almost like she's a Pixar character. And this will sound insulting, but like she's obviously a woman, but presents boyish.
Yeah.
Not even mannish, boyish. Short haircut.
Yes.
Kind of a youthful energy where she could almost be a Pixar character that's like genderless. That's just like, this is Joy from Inside Out 3.
Yeah.
Or giddiness or something, you know, like, and so I'm always a big fan of hers. I think she makes me laugh because she's really good at comedy, but she also kind of just, her stand-up does have a like The Office or Parks and Recreation. You laugh, but it's a feel-good laugh. There's laugh because it's mean. There's laugh because it's edgy. There's laugh because it's feel-good funny. And hers is just kind of like, man, that was a good hour spent. That said, her new special's terrible. No, that was a joke. Gotcha. No, her new special is good. I've seen some critics kind of not being fairly critical of it. It's just not as good as what I kind of expect. But I did laugh. I laughed several times. But her 2018 one, which I'm sure is on Netflix, I think I was hoping for like another of that level. And it wasn't. But it's funny. And like I said, she addresses controversy. Take note. Edgelords and spoken word artists, she addresses controversy, whether you believe her or not, she's doing it with humor. And that's what comedy used to be. If you had issues or statements to make, you don't pause the show and go, let's get serious about trans people. You'd make jokes, and if they don't like the jokes, so be it. But you don't, I feel like too many comics have started to abuse the comedy platform. Like, now that I have your attention, I have some serious things to say. No. Joke. If you have something to say, do it through jokes. That's the gift of comedy. That's why George Carlin could make jokes or Richard Pryor, but they meant something, but they were funny.
Yeah.
Except for one George Carlin special, which was just really dour.
Which one?
The one with all the tombstones.
I thought it was great.
It was not.
His last one, I think, right?
No, that was his second to last one. Okay. Thank God.
Yeah.
He did one that would resemble comedy again after that one, but that was... We all fucking suck, and then you die. They don't give a shit about you. Fuck you. Good night, everybody. George Carlin. But yeah, like Ellen DeGeneres, I don't know how people feel about her that are listening to this, but I'm a fan. So if you're like, I've never found her funny, don't bother. Like, don't bother, obviously. But I've always thought she's really, really hilarious. And she... I put her in a class with like Daniel Tosh, where I'm like, I kind of wish you guys didn't have such successful TV careers, because I would have liked to have seen more stand-up, you know, in the old way, like every 4 years. Yeah. Not, hey, it's been 8 months. I got my new hour of thoughts.
Yeah.
But like, I would have not minded like two or three more Daniel Tosh specials and two or three Ellen DeGeneres specials in the span of like 15 years. But she gave us another one and it's good. But I would say go back to her 2018 Netflix special would be my recommendation to you here. But I enjoyed the new one. But if you haven't seen either, 2018 would be my rec. So on that note, you know where to find me. You won't, but you know where to find me. I've got a Patreon. You like that, Mike? You like how they don't do anything and I'm telling them here's a place where you can buy stuff from me? Oh, man. Sometimes I got to joke, people. Sometimes you gotta laugh at yourself. But yeah, go to the website. I write blogs. I make videos. I got shows. I got hoes in different area codes. You know, ludicrous to my fans who have no idea why I just said that. It's a ludicrous lyric. Mike, housekeeping so I can go walk in front of the L train.
Don't do that. obviously, we are a visual product and an audio product. So if you are watching on YouTube, please go over and follow the show. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts.
No new reviews in a month on Apple.
Well, you know, that goes par for the course in podcasting.
No, but we were getting reviews. So this is your check-in, everybody, to go leave a review on Spotify and or Apple.
I'm sure they're going to jump at it after you torch them for an hour.
You know what? Some people like it when a dominatrix steps on their nuts for an hour. So that's you guys. You dominatrix fans, this is your week to review with 5 stars.
If you're listening to the show, you can watch the show on YouTube. Please go over there and leave us a comment. I'm so out of focus, I think. Leave us a comment. I think I'm losing my train of thought here, but you know what to do by at this point. Leave a comment on the YouTube, and it helps the algorithm. And I'm going to let JL get out of here.
Thank you very much. Sometimes, you know, just like Donald Trump, that was his new thing this week. They're not listening anymore, but they'll miss out. Donald Trump basically said, we need the purge. I don't know if you heard what he said. We need just one day of violence. If we had really bad violence for one day, people would learn. The purge. Donald Trump's policy is the fucking purge. But what's Kamala Harris's tax proposal? Trump wants the purge. Yeah, but I don't know enough about Kamala Harris. Well, hopefully that's a relief to you when you're running to your house before 6 p.m. with the gang trying to murder you. The purge is his policy. If we had one day of but it's got to be really bad violence. Like, I think he just saw the purge. He saw Scarface and started saying, they're emptying asylums. They're putting everybody on boats. And then he saw the purge and was like, this is a good, I think the purge, we should do, it's called purge. We're going to purge. Okay, we do purge, strong purge. Mike Pence. Where's Mike Pence? I want to purge him first. But yeah, so, you know, we got to know more about Kamala Harris is the point. But sometimes you got to purge. And this was a purge episode. Okay, I had, like I said, second best episode of my life, second best show of my life this past weekend. Nobody showed up. And the tape is only half working. Only half of the show got taped. So it's hard to not feel like that's a sign upon sign. And then obviously I think our country is crumbling as well. And I know the trash that supports Trump think it is also. But I think end of democracy, electing a treasonous tyrant is more of a threat than black people in my neighborhood. Nay. So on that note, see you next Thursday.